Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
John Connor, prophesized leader of the resistance. Soldier, you put every man and woman in this sub in jeopardy with your little frogman stunt. What the hell are you doing here?
This is mine. This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to FilmSack. That's right, FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. This is episode 405 and the first episode of 2019. Welcome back, everybody. My name's
so
Scott.
So much drama.
Yeah, I know, there's a lot of drama. Don't worry, it has huge payoff later. I'm Scott Johnson, and I'm joined, of course, by Brian. So that's what death tastes like, Dunaway.
Tastes like refried beans. Oh, hi. If you are listening to this, then you are the resistance. And as a resistance, I'm going to have to ask you to be an organ donor. Because you never know when John Connor, the great and angry, may need a heart transplant in the field. Totally doable. So be sure to check that little donor box on the form down at the DMV, if you can find it. I mean, obviously, Kyle Reese couldn't. Also, here's a tip. Handbrakes. Not for passengers. Nope. One more thing. If you do find the DMV, don't fall for the old kiss for your organs trick. It's Skynet. And Skynet is a horrible kisser. Instant regret. Speaking of Skynet, Skynet's a machine. And like all machines, it has an off switch. Unlike Christian Bale, when you walk into his sight line during a scene. So that is what death tastes like. Bail out.
Bail out has so many connotations. I like them all. Also with us, Randy, some believe he holds the key to salvation. Others believe he's a false prophet, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott, Brian. Brian.
Hi.
We've gathered you here today because one of you is going back in time to fork my mom. Welcome to the all-new hit game show, Mother Forker. You'll compete in a series of grueling physical challenges that will change you so much that only 8 years from now, you'll look like Michael Biehn, even though you look nothing like him now. Hold on. No, you're thinking of Richard Dean Anderson. I mean, yeah, well, he has to be MacGyver. Okay, I'm going to finish the intro. Thanks. Okay. It all starts tonight on Mother Forker.
I'll tune in. Yeah, I'll be there first day.
Kyle Reese pieces.
Finally, and as always, Brian, better than a 3-day-old coyote, Ibbot.
What isn't? Well, Mr. Dunaway, you've executed the plan perfectly. What plan, you ask? I guess we never put the truth of who you really are into your memory banks. Yes, that's right. You're an android that we built and programmed with a specific and simple mission: to bring Scott Johnson to episode of FilmSack. Forgot to write down the number. It all started when we planted you into existence in 2004 with false memories and a family trained in acting. Then we orchestrated the formation of Extra Life Radio by using Inception. By the way, we also Inception the movie Inception, but we'll save that for when we actually watch Inception. And finally, we planted the seed of the idea for FilmSack and made sure it included Randy Deluxe for very specific reasons and that the show continued on for years to make it to this very episode. And now that we're here... shoot, I can't for the life of me remember what it was so important that we get Scott to this very moment. Hold on, it'll come to me.
Yeah, it may
have
to, at the end of the show, maybe it'll have come back to you. It's
I'm an infiltrator.
Yeah, you are indeed. Hey, everybody, that's right. It's Terminator Salvation.
You guessed it.
Yeah, you guessed it. Now, going into this, we should, before I play Fletcher, we got to make something real clear here. I am a big time fan of Terminator movies. I think we probably all can say that with to some level or degree. But in my case, once I saw three, the one after the best one, two, three was like, oh, this is not good. I don't like the direction we're going here. And then I kind of just never cared again anytime one of these would get announced. So I never saw Salvation. And I think I was just so bummed that three was such poo that I just never got on board.
Christina Loken Terminator, right? The Lady Terminator.
Yeah.
Right. Correct.
Okay. Yeah.
And because we went from really cool, liquid motion, to a kind of a hybrid between liquid motion and a really weird spider manipulating.
That's right.
Thing.
Yeah. I would really like to hear Scott Fletcher and then ask you a really specific question about this series.
All right. Scott. Sounds good. So here's Scott Fletcher explaining more.
Terminator Salvation. In 2018, a mysterious new weapon in the war against the machines, half human and half machine, comes to John Connor on the eve of a resistance attack on Skynet. But whose side is he on? And can he be trusted?
Turns out, yes. So what?
Oh, wow! I didn't even think to ask those questions while watching this movie. That's crazy.
You should have read the synopsis.
That's crazy.
What questions you should be asking during this movie?
The synopsis has some intrigue that the movie didn't actually give me. That's amazing.
Yeah, no, the synopsis assumes much more than what existed in the film it's talking about. So, Randy, ask your question now.
For me, like, I have also not seen four until now, and I never saw five, and now I'm probably gonna go watch it.
Yeah.
So for me, this series of movies is now about the other people that are inserted into the story. And I don't mean the characters, I mean the actors. I now look at this series among all movies that have ever been made. This series, for some reason, all of my hopes and dreams are hanging on, oh, is that the one with Claire Danes? And you know what? I like Claire Danes, and so I liked Terminator 3, but a lot of people freaking hate Claire Danes, and they wouldn't even give it a chance. So Terminator Salvation comes along, and I'm like, oh my God, am I going to spend this whole movie trying to tell you the difference between Sam Worthington and Christian Bale? Because it's not easy. Early on in this movie, I'm like, are they playing the same character? It was very confusing for me.
Really?
I didn't see that at all.
Interesting. Now, as far as three goes, I didn't like it, not because of Claire Danes. I was actually very hopeful with Claire Danes. I just felt like it was a time, and I remember feeling back during this time, there was too much space between Terminator 2 and Terminator 3, which is always seems to be a big gap between these Terminator movies. But part 3, we were kind of falling out of favor at that point with Arnold Schwarzenegger. It didn't feel like it was a Schwarzenegger movie. It felt like they were just calling him back. Come on back in, Schwarzenegger. Come back in. Let's try this one more time. And I feel like it fell flat.
Well, Randy's right about the actor swapping, because it's a little like the vacation movies. Like the first movie and the second movie were pretty consistent, but the third and on, it's like, all right, who's playing Rusty this time? The only commonality is at some point something like Arnold Schwarzenegger will show up, and in this movie we get that in a way, which we'll talk about later.
Scott, you know, you like Terminator 2, but you're aware, right, that people hate it because of Edward Furlong, right?
Well, I'm aware that nobody likes Edward Furlong, but I don't think Terminator 2 because of anything. I think Terminator 2, I'm gonna
send somebody back in time and beat some.
It's like, I mean, I can understand people hating Phantom Menace because of Jake Lloyd, but hating right. Terminator 2 because of Edward Furlong. I think
the movie transcends his existence in it, but I also agree that he's bad in it. Being said, 2's the best, and here's the big shocker of the day. My second favorite one, I think, is probably this one.
Me and Scott may be on the same page.
I enjoyed Salvation a lot, and I don't know what the deal is, because I there's problems with it. Don't get me wrong. Smokin' Blood Moon or whatever her name is. What's her name? Moon Bloodgood is in it, and she's just horribly miscast, and she's bad in it, and she's, you know, this is just a crappy portrayal.
The character is wasted. Like, I don't know why this character is here, except when we first see her and she's showing off her cleavage unnecessarily, I'm like, oh, she's going to kiss him by the end of this movie.
Yeah, there's a bit of that. But, I totally could have cut all that out. You wouldn't need it. You didn't need any of it, actually. All that bit, it was just stupid. But the rest of the movie is kind of part of it appeals to me because it looks like The Road. It feels like a Mad Max movie. Like, there's a lot of post-apocalyptic stuff which just appeals to me generally. And they've never gotten that right in the previous Terminator movies. Whenever they portray the future, it's always like, okay, what's this? These are toys and it's dumb and it doesn't look that interesting to me. But this really captured a blown out, destroyed civilization in a way that grabbed me immediately and spent all of its time there. That's the other thing, is there was no time hopping here other than the implication of time hopping. It was all, fighting in the future and the future being last year. But
this was by far the best looking Terminator stuff. Visually, to me, this is.
Yeah,
I can't even believe this is 2009.
I would agree. I think it holds up hugely. Like, 2009 is, I guess, not that long ago. It's 10 years ago, but
it still looks
really good. And here's the other thing: they introduce stuff that I'm interested in, like giant mech people pickers,
harvesters
are badass, and those motorcycles
Terminator
are
motorcycles?
So cool.
Yeah, the
giant gunhead Terminator machines.
Yes. Yeah. Those are so cool. Those are the harvesters, right? Whatever they are. Those are so cool.
And even the Eelinators.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, the Eelinators. Hydrinators.
Yes.
The Eelinators were awesome and scary. And I'm like, because that's the point. That's the part of the film where I start asking the question, what would the self-aware Skynet actually do? Like, up until that point, I'm busy trying to keep up, right? Mm-hmm. And then I stop, and I'm like, ooh, okay. So Skynet is not just making these ugly, dumb, bipedal humanoid-type things, right? It's like Skynet, and what else would they do? Like, Skynet might make, Terminators that look like dogs.
Yeah, and they've got even the ones that were bipedal, guards at the prison, were cool because they have like old stuff wrapped around their head and they just look nasty. Like the one in the city that's like
beefy,
fighting off the young Kyle Reese and everything.
Yeah,
just a big gnarly metal bony looking thing that has been there forever, doesn't need to eat, sleep or drink, and just the minute it sees a human.
I'll shoot my foot off. I don't care. Let's go.
That stuff really got me. Like, I was so into that world building, and I think that's what the key was for me here. The rest of the movie, whatever, it's fair to middling story. It's not that big a deal.
Well, there's not much of a story.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I talked about this in my intro thing. The issue I have with the story is the whole, we've had this plan in motion for months of that. You're going to be out here. You're going to find John Connor. You're going to hook up with him. You're going to gain his trust, and then you're going to lead him here to Skynet, when it really should have been, you're going to find John Connor, and then this bomb that we have inserted in your chest is going to go off and blow John Connor and his rebels up.
Mm-hmm.
So many easier ways for them to say, all right, what's the quickest way for us to get from point A to point B?
I thought about that too, but this film, I'm giving it credit, probably doesn't deserve, but I'm going to also go, well, Skynet is always involved with time travel. Mm. And so maybe it's been there many times before.
Doctor Strange this? Are you saying that they Doctor Strange
I think they Doctor Strange this because this was just a branch on the possibilities of what could happen. And I think that's where this was. I think the fact that there's probably another universe where where they don't have the resistance headquarters in a submarine and wouldn't be so stupid. I really hated that part. I like Michael Ironside, but I didn't. Yeah. I didn't want Michael Ironside in this movie. I didn't care for that. Brought the whole thing down.
You're an insane person. He's great. He should be in things, and it doesn't matter what capacity he's in. He should always be in them. By the way, I don't know if you guys noticed this. He never sat down.
The same way.
Go ahead.
See if you feel the same way after we watch Space Hunter Adventures in the Forbidden Zone.
Don't get me wrong. I love Michael Ironside, and there's plenty of movies that he was great in, but I just did not feel like that particular character. I think it needed to be less, I don't know. He just brings a bit of, his character doesn't seem to be for that role.
The quote Scott played at the top of the show was so reminiscent of Welcome to Top Gun that it was like, it was a little jarring. Mm-hmm. Like it felt exactly. I was like, "Whoa, are we about to get trained up?" No. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, I thought we were. It was exciting for a moment.
Yeah, for a hot second.
I like seeing Michael Ironside out in the field and leading in the field. Him being back at HQ, I just don't see. I don't know. It didn't feel right to me. Hmm. That's not such a nitpick.
It's a tiny thing. I mean, the best actor in this movie, I think, is Anton Yelchin, and it reminded me once again, what a freaking loss it is that he died so young. He was only 27. This would have been the same year that Star Trek, J.J. Abrams' Star Trek came out, so that would have been, for a lot of people, their first exposure to him. But in these two movies that year, I think he's incredible. I think he's incredible in this. I think he is believable and completely sympathetic and 100% nails what I would want out of that character from him in particular. Everyone else phoned it in. Sam Worthington, where's your accent, buddy? You got that thing going up and down. Christian Bale, you're not even that great in this, buddy. I know you're a good actor. You're Christian Bale after all, but
Christian Bale's the most overrated actor ever. Anton Yelchin, though, like I alluded to earlier, the only thing that bugs me about him is he looks nothing like the Kyle Reese from 1984. And it's I'm having a really hard time with that. Like, is there anything they could have done? Like, Anton Yelchin is amazing. He's like Jesse Eisenberg was a human. He's like, it just like everything about it, you know?
But two John Connors that have even looked similar.
Well, they don't.
That doesn't bother me. Close. That doesn't bother me.
The only reason that we have Arnold Schwarzenegger is because that thing has to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger as much as possible.
Right. Forever. And the new one, the Genesis one, which I have not seen either, Randy, but that has a John Connor in it that looks nothing like any John Connor ever, including now, then you'll have your disconnect, because this is two adult John Connors in a row, and you'll be like, okay, that is not Christian Bale.
Genesis is actually my third favorite.
Really?
I dug that one a lot. I really did. It brought the heart back to the series, because this one definitely took the heart away, because we were portraying John Connor in a flip role where he was less human than the Terminators and Skynet creations. So, because I kind of like the Marcus. I love the Marcus Wright character. Mm. And I thought Sam Worthington did fine, but yeah, his acting sometimes kind of faltered here and there. But I thought it was
mostly his accent. His accent was all over the freaking place.
Yeah, his accent was kind of all over the place.
I just don't understand why they made them look the same. Like, one of them could have had a little bit of facial hair or
like they looked just nothing something.
Alike. Yeah, I don't think they look.
I didn't see that.
Much.
I didn't see that at all. But
okay, all right.
Sam Worthington's head is round. Christian Bale's head is square. It's triangular.
All right, not knowing what story is being told.
Right.
At the very beginning of this movie, I'm like, is this John Connor? I don't know. And then he gets killed in an execution chamber, and then we see Christian Bale, and I'm like, wow, he looks really... Is that the same person?
Oh, you thought, really?
It was very... Yeah. It was weird to me that so much technical correctness and continuity was poured into this film. Like, they tried really, really hard to get all this other stuff looking so great. And for some reason, Sam Worthington and Christian Bale looked enough alike that when I first would spot them in a scene, like, okay, where are we now? What are we
doing?
Were
you watching this on your phone?
Which guy is that? No.
You be tripping, yo.
Yeah.
Right, you be tripping, yo.
I didn't have a problem with any of that, but I did. I mean, this was a year, a big year for Worthington. He did
Avatar
that year. So 2009 was Avatar. Then you had this.
You say a big year for Worthington like he's had other big years.
Yeah. Right. This was it. It's probably this the peak.
Yeah, the big year for, I should have said.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of.
By the way,
I think he's an Avatar, and I'm having a hard time coming up with
he's
any
got
other...
a fine but, screen presence. There's nothing wrong with him, generally speaking. Yeah. I don't know where he's at now or what he's up to, but...
Oh, I'll tell you what he's up to. Go ahead and settle in. Avatar 2 in post-production, as well as Avatar 3, and they're filming Avatar 4 and 5.
Okay, what else? All. Outside of Avatar, what else we got? Anything else? Yeah.
No. I mean, he did a couple of things. Clash of the Titans was okay. I never saw Man of the Ledge.
About Clash of the Titans.
Yeah. But that was his really big year.
It feels like if you need Sam Worthington, you could probably find a dozen other actors who can do Sam Worthington.
Oh yeah, you just go buy it. You get a Hemsworth. From Sam Worthington. Just get a Hemsworth because he's an Australian as well. They're all Australian, so you got one Australian Sam Worthington. Who's a better Australian? Any of the Hemsworths.
The factory that they show in Terminator Salvation was actually a Hemsworth factory. I don't know if you know this. Saw this in the trivia. By the way,
I do want to just say real quick, effects-wise, I thought the Arnold moment looked really good.
It looked so good.
Like, legit.
Yeah, surprisingly, yeah.
Yeah, like, not goofy and not uncanny, and I know it's not him, but whatever I'm looking at looks totally convincing to me.
But he's supposed to be it's supposed to be a robot anyway, right? So I think it kind of give a little bit of leeway.
There was a lot of cost savings going on, and it bled through. Like I was objectively annoyed at that. The same way. Do you remember in Goblet of Fire when they did a bunch of cost savings on the dragons, and so they just the whole movie you never really get to see dragons much.
I don't remember
because you're seeing the crowd reacting to dragons, or a baby dragon gets pulled out of a pouch, and like the kid hides it away to see what it is. Like in this movie, when I finally get to see Arnold Schwarzenegger, it's like, all right, we've shown you Arnie as fast as we can. We're going to start ripping his body off and ripping his face off. So you don't. We're going to see him from behind as he walks away.
I don't think that was cost saving. That was predetermined before the film. Mick G did a lot of storyboarding for this ahead of time. And one of the things he went light on in the storyboard was the Arnold scene. And the reason why is it wasn't sure that Arnold would be able to be in any capacity, nor would he agree to his likeness being in the movie. So they kind of glossed over that early on in production. So I don't think that was a cost saving.
Yeah, and he's not in this thing. He's not credited. He didn't film anything.
No,
he
couldn't be in it.
No,
if Arnold could not be or did not agree, they were just going to have the face get blown off immediately.
Right.
And so they at least got to give a little something.
Well, they
could have just held a Polaroid photo of Arnold Schwarzenegger's face in front of the robot. Boom. Oh, okay. All right. I guess it was supposed to look like
The other part that leads us away from thinking it was cost saving, it says this, as of 2010, and I think this record is still true. I don't know if that's inflation is included or not, but it remains the most expensive independently financed, meaning non-studio feature, with the budget close to $200 million. That's a lot of money. $200 million even today for your movies is a hell of a lot of money.
You know, they got ILM to get in there and do some color matching so that the CG would always look good in this washed out world. So I mean,
in that truck from the harvester, I honestly think that may be one of my favorite action scenes, certainly in any Terminator movie, but in a lot of movies. Like, I loved every second of that. Now, people are going to go, well, Scott, you're predisposed to a bunch of shitty old cars chasing each other down a dirt road. I know that. I understand that. But I think that was, like, I was stoked. I was watching that going, all right, man, this is my kind of action scene. And if your Terminator movie is going to be worth anything, it needs to have a couple of marquee action moments.
Yeah. I haven't been that excited since Terminator 2 when Arnold drove that semi off the embankment into the gutter.
That wasn't Arnold, though. That was the T-1000.
No, that's right. It was. You're right. Right. But no, Arnold was on the motorcycle, wasn't he?
And he's using the shotgun to blow holes into Robert Patrick's face and...
Yep.
Like that's I would put this right up there with that, which I also think is an iconic and important action scene.
This movie almost had one of my favorite action sequences of all time with the A-10 Warthogs, and it happened really fast and it's over, and it's intended to demonstrate to you how the machines as a faction are way more powerful than the humans as a faction. And so, like,
right.
I of course was questioning, how the hell do they still have working A-10s? What the hell? How does humanity have the what? And then of course they immediately both get destroyed. Those planes apparently only got to fly for like 5 minutes and blam blam, you know.
Yeah.
But like the actual action of it, of them flying around like, I don't know, the Grand Canyon or something, was really cool.
Yeah,
I enjoyed that a lot.
It was good and it looked good. There's just not a lot of seams here in those scenes, and that's a huge credit here, because that's hard to do. And even in modern movies that use a lot of effects to accomplish what they need to do, you just are sort of always like, oh well, I know how that was done. That's a big CGI monster there, or this is a whatever. Those motorcycles looked real. They were organic to the world. When they got drug around and smacked into other cars, it looked like real physics happening. Like, I was not taken out of any of that. And it's been a while since I felt that way about a movie that's 10 years on. So I guess I came away from this surprised how much I enjoyed it. I thought I was going to hate it, because I remember everybody at the time going, boo-hoo, wee-wah.
I remember hating it when I first saw it. And this is only the second time I've seen it. And I don't know why. It was a 180-degree turnaround for me that I really did like at this time.
I think
I'm not ready to put it up as number two.
Oh, no. I think
the first Terminator is my second favorite. But
I'd put it, it's a close
easily
third.
Slides into third place.
Yeah.
The only reason why one has slipped over the years for me is that it just doesn't hold up visually. It's still, you know, it's kind of a slow movie. Don't get me wrong. It is a monumentally important film. And it done some amazing things. And I love the story, and it started a franchise. But if you ask me, what do I want to watch today? And that's how I usually rate it, my list. And I think that would be further down the list for me.
The other interesting thing is, it never really occurred to me until it was over and I was reading through some trivia that this movie was a PG-13 film. And according to the producers, they did not intentionally do that. They were just making their movie, and that's the rating it got.
But we got Christian Bale. How can it be PG-13?
Well, the reason I say that is there really is no quote unquote objectionable language, and there are no Linda Hamilton type boobs or any of that going on. So there's your, I guess that's your
the Hamilton boobs.
Right. But violence wise and just sort of like visceral, whatever, and dark, dank, you know, portrayal, that's all there. So I don't know. It's weird. It's like a movie that didn't feel watered down to me.
Right. I think our expectations, most of the complaints I read about in the critical reviews of this film have mostly been because I think it just went to a different direction than what everybody was expecting. The expectations were just different. And I think that hurt this film, especially in early reviews.
Mm. Well, my memory of those reviews and the reason I didn't see it is that somebody came out and said, yeah, it's a shitty road trip movie. And I'm like, oh, a road trip movie. That's not interesting to me at all. Like,
that was part of three, though, wasn't it? Wasn't that pretty much all of them road trip movies?
They're all kind of road trip movies.
Like three and four?
Well, the two.
Four is more of a, or three is more of a buddy cop film.
Right. I can see that.
A rom-com.
Yeah.
But like, that's just all I remember, about the decision to not see it. And like, in retrospect, I probably would have enjoyed this a lot in the theater at the time. You know, it's real competent. Like, that's the thing. People give McGee a bunch of shit, but man,
love McGee.
This guy, yeah, he's really good at what he does, and he rarely tries to do something he's not good at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's got a great vision, and I think the pacing was good on this as well. And the only thing that kind of makes me wonder, I think McGee had some love eyes for Christian Bale, and I think he let him with a little bit too much control, because rumors are, and from the trivia that I read, that Christian Bale was actually in the editing room for like 8 hours a day with McGee.
Really?
Just having all this influence and input into the film.
Hey, real quick, can McGee just change it? I hate his name. I hate it.
It sounds like a Scottish rapper.
Right.
I haven't thought of it that way, but it annoys me to no end. There's no way it's his real name, right? Come on, McGee.
Right, it's a shortening of his middle name. His name is Joseph McGinty Nickel, and he could have just gone by Joseph Nickel. I don't know why he didn't.
Here's the deal: his mom, his uncle, and his dad were also named Joe McNickel or Joe Nickel.
Yeah,
right.
And his mom gave him the nickname McGee to separate him from
All right. Well, I'm slightly better with it because moms are cool, but come on, man.
Yeah, like, the guy is richer than the world. Like he somehow came away from a series of Charlie's Angels movies and this one and with a ridiculous amount of money. He produced Supernatural for over a decade.
Right.
And like he's perfectly good at this particular thing, which is like helicopters fall off of a dam and getting started in midair and then flying away. Like he's like, I can't think of anybody I would rather have directing this kind of like action and gritty post-apocalyptic nonsense.
Yeah.
So I've only seen this and the first Charlie's Angels movie. I mean, unless we're counting like his music videos for Smash Mouth's
All Star. Yeah, well, you've probably seen all
Sugar
of those,
Ray's
right?
Fly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which I'd probably leave off my resume. But, I take that back. I've been watching Lethal Weapon, the TV show, which is so much better than it should be. Mm-hmm. You know,
it really is.
He directed two episodes the first two, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, plus he's executive or something on a producer, I guess, of 35 of those episodes. So yeah, he's been busy with that.
He directed We Are Marshall, which was a great film, got nominated for awards and didn't have all of this like crazy action. So, you know, I think he has chops.
He's got range, and the range is interesting because I don't think those Charlie's Angels movies are very good. I think they're fun and silly in their own little way, but they don't ever strike me as like, oh, this is the beginning of a incredible directorial whatever. But then you dive into this movie, and it's got like vision and world building in a way that is well beyond anything but Charlie's Angels or any of these other projects for that matter. Yeah. So, yeah, it's not perfect. It's got all kinds of issues. The story holes are a problem. Plus, I think Terminator is always the biggest mistake Terminator ever made as a series was relying so much on really bad time travel ideas, like terrible, wrong time travel.
I mean, Terminator is basically built on the grandfather paradox.
Yeah, and it sucks.
The time travel grandfather paradox.
And it sucks because if you send somebody back in time to stop a thing, it would have already been stopped. You know what I mean? Like into this loop and it's just bad. It works in Back to the Future because it's fun and silly and there's other reasons to like it. Terminator's always suffered from this. This movie's gets away with it a little bit more, in my opinion, because you're not seeing the time travel constantly. You're just dealing with the other side of the sending things back part. Mm-hmm.
Well, and my to slightly disagree with you, if you send someone back in time to stop a thing, it'll stop, but not in your timeline. Your timeline still has to exist in order for you to have created the time machine that sent the person back.
I agree, but not in Terminator land.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yes.
Screw that up. So I'm with you 100%. Like I've always, I have always aligned myself with Ibbot's time travel theories. I think you've been dead on, and very few movies get this right, if any. Mm-hmm. I liked Looper for it being a fun romp.
But yes, right.
You were quick to remind everybody that that thing's got this, some of these problems, and so Terminator has never really fessed up to those or faced them in a way that is satisfying to me. So I will always have this flaw with it. But if you're talking about just fun world building and taking it to the next level and going places, this movie gets to do that. And some of the others don't. And I like it for that. I like it. I think we should watch Genesis here since some of us have not seen it.
And I would be up for watching Genesis again. And seeing if I've looked at it more favorably, kind of like I looked at this one more favorably.
Who's a dragon lady's in it, right? What's her name?
Amelia Clark. And
right.
And then John Clark. Unrelated as John Connor for this one.
And he's
speaking of funny looking ladies. Yeah. Can we talk about Helena Bonham Carter for a moment?
Oh man.
She is a very unique looking lady.
Send your emails to Randy Deluxe.
No. She is in this movie because she's funny looking. She's made even more funny looking in order to play this role.
I think she's exotic looking. I would not call I find her attractive. I wouldn't call Helena Bonham Carter funny looking, but more exotic looking.
I didn't say anything about her attractiveness. This is a role that confused the hell out of me. I still don't understand who she was, who she was working for, what is she? Like it's just like this, like, the one thing this movie failed completely to communicate to me is what she was doing at the execution of Sam Worthington, and then later at the I don't know, the back and forth with him when he's
still,
he's trying so hard to be. Oh, by the way, trope alert.
Yeah. Oh, let's get one in here. Hold on a sec, for real.
He is the villain protagonist, so that means he has to he has to not only be horribly conflicted for the protagonists, the other protagonists, but he also has to be in conflict with the other villains. And so, like, they use her as the sort of like face of that, and it just I needed so much more story.
I agree with you 100% that they absolutely did not explain that at all. I really still don't know exactly what's going on. I think my understanding is she was somebody at Skynet that was a brilliant engineer, scientist lady, and she had all kinds of cool stuff going on. And then, but I guess she put her better looking, less cancery self inside of a video to show later. Like,
Skynet chose.
Not really a video. I mean, exactly. Skynet said, oh, you know, this visage might be the one that, you know, you like better, or maybe this one, or maybe this one.
Oh, right. Like, okay. You know, the whole,
yeah. So it just happened to choose her as thinking that it was somebody that he trusted and would listen to for the big reveal of, oh, you're actually the bad guy, and you've executed our plan perfectly.
Yeah, that was all weird. And him just peeling a scab off his head, basically, just so now he doesn't have to do anything.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Note to self, if you're going to implant somebody with a tracking mechanism or a way to control them, put it really, really deep so they can't just like use a fingernail clipper to pry it out.
If you put it inside my liver, I will never be able to get rid of it.
Exactly. So, yeah. But if it glows, it's on the top side of my arm, and I can see it, and it glows. It makes it pretty easy.
Yeah,
for me to
the movie does suffer from Death Starism in a couple of ways.
Oh, totally.
So you got that going on. You got him again with his heart for his freaking. Apparently, all you could do is punch his heart, and then you're good.
Right. Why does he need a heart anyway?
What a shitty design flaw that was.
Yeah, exactly.
And then,
not to mention the fact that the Terminator facility has a giant container of hot lava.
Oh, right.
Right where you might want to walk.
Right, exactly.
Well, it was a molten.
The worst place we could put this thing of hot lava? I know, right in the middle of where we're making all the Terminators.
Yeah. I mean, it was molten steel, and in theory, molten he shouldn't steel, have been able to break out of that because
magma.
Because the steel wouldn't have fallen off the way it did, but whatever. That was a kind of a fun scene, and so but you're right. It's like they're sticking stuff in places just some to make sure you got your connected little plot point.
Exactly.
We're gonna need to give him a heart transplant later. Where will that heart come from? How about the big obvious one that everyone's been punching the whole movie? And probably is not in good shape, by the way. That thing's probably
horrible
a piece of
shape.
Yeah.
I mean,
it
stopped for a good long time. I mean,
and you know what?
Good.
Maybe that does explain why he looks like Christian Bale in this movie and looks like John Clark in the next movie. It's that heart, that defective, beat up, punched heart.
Yeah. Also, I just want to make this comment because I don't know if it'll ever come up again, but Ron Howard's daughter there, Bryce Dallas Howard. Does she have access to a shower and nobody else does? Is that the deal? Because
she was always clean. Submarine has one shower on it, and it had a ladies' room sign over it. And they're like, "Oh well, I guess it only one person on the boat."
I'll tell you, there's two things that we kept for society in the future: dental care. And heart transplants, no problem. We got that.
I was going to say makeup for women. Every woman in this movie has perfect makeup on, even in the midst of crazy action. Moon Bloodgood, I'm like, oh wow, she really found time to get some eyeliner on. That's nice. Yeah. I'm glad.
Well, you know, there's all kinds of things you can do when social media is no longer involved.
I guess so.
You got plenty of time.
Yeah, that's true. 2018 didn't bug anybody, did it?
A little bit, but not much. Just for a moment, because I usually hold, like I said, the Terminator series to me is always, we don't know what timeline we're in. We could be in any timeline at this point.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And it just kind of has to be 2018 because of all the other events.
I agree with you, but, and I've said this on FilmSack many, many times, and for F's sake, I hope every filmmaker has learned this lesson. Go ahead and set it far enough in the future that we don't have this result. There is no need for this to have said 2018. If it had said 2118, none of us have this problem at all, period. I don't care about the ages of the people. That's not going to bother me. It's when you do this thing where I'm going to watch this movie in a few months and it's going to be the year, that is my problem.
Yeah, well, 9 years.
I understand that. Well, yeah, it was 9 years. But even then, it was obviously a really close... Well, look, Blade Runner is in a bit of a pinch because the original Blade Runner happened in, what, 2015 or something?
2000.
But 2019.
Wait.
It's something that's already come and gone, the first Blade Runner.
Yeah, the first Blade Runner's come and gone. The next one, 2049, we're not there yet, but there's no way we're going to be in that place when we get to 2049. So I've always said Star Trek's been the smartest. Put it out in the 23rd century. Don't have to mess with it. No one's going to live that long. It's fine. Somebody else's problem. Three generations.
I take that back, by the way. 2019 is this. Oh, we're in the year of Blade Runner, by the way.
Welcome to the year of Blade Runner.
Time to die.
Just say this.
You did. You're right. No, you're right. And also, we're in the year. We're in the year of Mad Max. Also, by the way, this is also the year of the first Mad Max. The first Mad Max. Yeah. So enjoy. Enjoy your post-apocalyptic nightmares on either side. But my point is either have your thing set in real time, a what if this happens in 09, or put it way far out. The problem is Terminator established a timeline in the first thing and they're having to try to adhere to that. Mm-hmm. So yeah. That's the only real hang-up.
And
there.
I think you kind of got to you create a little bit of tangibility if you create a movie that is going to be in the expected life range of the audience that you want to go see it, you know, because if you're saying, all right, this is in such a far flung out future that none of you will ever know what this is like anyway, then there's that disconnect of
right. And usually you can, but if you're like, you can avoid.
I'm going to be 61 when this year happens. Oh my gosh, let me see what this is going to be like.
Right.
Usually you can avoid the concept of years anyway, because you never comes up in most conversations. But when you're dealing with a time travel movie, I guess you kind of have to address it. But yeah, I don't know. It doesn't bother me once, like I said, it's outside. It's an alternate universe. It's outside of our current universe.
Yeah, it's kind of like that Spider-Verse movie is so good at bringing comic book alternate reality split timelines to a screen and making common people get it. Like, that's usually just the purview of a comic, and no movies ever really go there. That movie very successfully portrayed that idea, and it's a lot of fun. You can have so much fun with it. But these movies are talking. These movies assume a single timeline, a going back, and a constant effort to stop a thing that, and then they just loop into it. It just doesn't work. I don't think about the time travel in Terminator movies. It'll just piss you off because it's all jacked up and completely broken. And it's fine. Whatever. I mean, are they making new?
That is one of those things. Far better if you just kind of roll with it. You know, don't pay too much attention to it.
Yeah. The kid, I just wanted to point this out real quick. The kid who played in 3, who played John Connor, the slightly older 20-something John Connor, is the dirty yellow bastard actor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. Can't think of his name right now, but I just wanted to throw that out there since we were talking earlier about the many faces of John Connor. Yes, Randy.
I wanted to do a completely different comparison between this movie and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, so I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah.
This movie, I would not have appreciated at all the Arnold Schwarzenegger cameo if it had happened even a minute earlier in the movie. I needed a lot of this movie to happen to sort of whet my appetite for this thing, in the same way that Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse holds off hard on even showing you Mary Jane and Spider-Ham and Penny Parker and freaking Nick Cage as Nick Cage as Spider-Man Noir. Yeah. And it was like, if those had come along earlier in the film, I would have been no. But I have a whole movie that happens, and I get connected to all the characters and the intrigue of what I'm wondering is going on, and then Spider-Ham comes along and it's John Mulaney. And yeah. I'm like, this is amazing. And like, it's not stupid and dumb at all.
No,
you know?
They are. That's a genius thing in that movie is how they pulled that off. And it didn't feel stupid. Like that. And the anime girl in the ball. Like I'm not even familiar with that material the way I was with Spider-Ham. And even then I was like, oh my gosh, you guys pulled this off.
That's Penny Parker, voiced by Kimiko Glenn. Oh, she's so awesome.
Is she? She do video game stuff, I bet. Probably.
Yes.
So let me point to something about what you just said, and if I can remember it, it's going to be real fun. What was it? Oh, when he's so the Arnold reveal. I agree, it's timed well, and you know, feels good for where it is and all that. Does it bug anybody else though? That again, this is the broken timeline. We got John Connor face to face with his old pal, the T-800 from 1992. When he was a kid and was hacking ATMs and stuff, and here he is again. Hey, it's my old pal. You don't have to be a bad machine. Remember this?
There's none of that. That's right. The only experience he would have had with the Arnold, at least unless there are other movies that insert him in further, but the only experience he's had with the T-800 is one of help. This was the guy that saved me and my mom from Liquidnator.
Right. That would have been the last point of contact he would have had. So it wouldn't have been just, I'm going to kill this thing that I just accidentally ran into. It would be a much more emotional sort of conflicting moment. He'd still have to fight him, but it's not the same. But then I realize as I'm complaining about that we got young Kyle Reese in his teens, who's going to go back in time pretty soon and have sex with your mom. And that's the only way that you get born? Like, oh my gosh, it's so bad, you guys.
And I'm trying to remember, does he know, like, has it been revealed in the movies, Sarah Connor telling her son, by the way, you have to send Kyle Reese back to have sex with me so you'll be born?
Yeah, they did it in the narration, the uncredited Linda Hamilton tape he was playing earlier.
They did
earlier.
In this one. Okay, all right.
Yeah, that little tape they're playing
someone,
at the top.
Send back someone hot, please.
Yeah. Well, I think she said you have to send back Kyle Reese. I think she...
Right, yeah.
Which makes no sense because that means she knows it was Kyle Reese. It's already happened. Ah!
It's okay. No, it's okay.
It's totally not okay. Like, it's awful. It's awful. All right.
Right.
Anyway, it's really broken, dude. You have to admit.
It is. Oh, it's totally broken.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, not to get gross, but I mean, could any difference in chaos, in Jeff Goldblum's chaos theory of dripping water down his hand, have caused a different sperm to actually make contact with the Sarah Connor egg and produce a different...
Well, maybe, you know, but even then,
it would still be a John Connor that would grow up in that...
Him to exist and to tell Kyle Reese to go back in time makes no sense because you already exist. So you have to go back in time and do it with my mom to make a baby so that I'm here.
So is it even time travel?
We've broken Scott.
Oh my gosh. Seriously. I'm like a clock with like everything went boring and cuckoo, all that. I can't deal with it. It's stupid.
My favorite part was where you said something about Christian Bale showing emotion. Cause I'm sorry. It's just, he doesn't. I like
Christian Bale. I know you said he's
overrated.
He's just overrated. That's all.
I think he's great. I think he's an amazing actor.
Yeah, I think he's great.
I think I can't. I mean, I'm not going to look at this and go, ooh, or even Batman. Batman's pretty playing it straight, but he's done some pretty impressive business before and after his big $200 million projects. I mean, he was kind of an a-hole on set. Should we talk about that real quick? Let's do that. I got some clips even of this. Let's listen to the full, it's not the full thing, but 35 seconds of this, which I have edited for tender ears. Okay, I put some bleeps in. Let's put it that way.
All right.
This is him on set after a director of photography, a DP, walked into frame where his eyes were looking, and it screwed him up in his very intense scene, and he went off famously.
How none of us, I know Dunaway referenced it, but how none of us used this as our opening is crazy.
It is crazy to me. But here it is.
I just knew if I did that you guys would also, so that's what I...
I don't know why I would have if I would have thought of it, honestly.
Well, here's Christian Bale losing his crap. Here you go.
Kick your f***ing ass. I want you off the f***ing set, you p***.
I'm sorry.
No, don't just be sorry. Think for one f***ing second. What the f*** are you doing? Are you professional or not?
Yes, I am.
Do I f***ing walk around and rip that? No, shut the f*** up, Bruce. Do I want? No! No! Don't shut me up! Am I gonna walk around and rip f***ing lights down in the middle of a scene? Then why the f*** are you walking right through? Like this in the background. What the f*** is it with you?
All right, so that's only a bit. There's other stuff like...
I was really hoping for the payoff.
Good for you.
Yeah, there's that
that's
bit.
That's the payoff. That's the money shot right there.
This is
there,
my favorite here. This is his Bill O'Reilly moment.
Let's go again!
There you go. So he's a kind of a dick in real life by some other accounts, not just this mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. And it bums me out because the stereotype I have in my head about everybody being a debutante, better than you, whatever, in Hollywood...
Diva.
Seems to keeps fulfilling its truth. Like, it just keeps happening. So for all the Tom Hankses we have, there's like eight other guys that are all dicks on set.
Yeah.
And, you know, Christian Bale.
You know, and you can blame it on being method and all that. Like, no, I'm totally in the scene and this is who my character is and stuff like that. But I think there is a point at which it's a little over the top, a little too much. Take, you know, you're an actor, you're doing a job. We don't act like this when we're, you know, cooking fries at McDonald's, even though we're doing a job too.
I should mention this. He claims, well, I shouldn't say claims. He apologized publicly, says he was very sincere about it. The apology does sound very sincere. And he says that he and Bruce are on great terms now. I don't know what that means.
We're done professionally.
The reference to Bruce, what's his name, the assistant director, is an aside. He's yelling at the director of photography, whose name is Shane Hurlbut.
Oh, Shane. And, I get that. I screwed up
names. Yeah, like, it's just an aside because, what's the guy's name? Bruce, here it is. Bruce Franklin just tries to sort of get in the middle of it. And Christian Bale yells at him by name. No. But the "Are you a professional?" is directed at Shane Hurlbut, and of course he apologized profusely. Doesn't change the fact that you're yelling at the director, the photographer, the cinematographer of this film. Like, you don't do this.
I mean, that is a load of anger coming out of there, and it's seems insane to me. If somebody crosses the thing, that may be a mistake professionally. I don't know, but do you just burn? Are you going to die on this hill? Like, what are you doing,
yeah,
man?
Right.
Like, calm down, Batman. You got a lot of career ahead of you. You're gonna win a bunch of awards. Like, what are you doing?
Adam McKay loves him. He must have gotten his crap figured out because Adam McKay wouldn't put him in so much stuff if he
movies, but yeah,
all the time now.
Yeah,
but he's now kind of stuck, isn't he? Like, Christian Bale has to play the quirky thing in the recession movie, and he has to, you know, he has to be in the movie Vice. Admittedly, he's trolling for Oscars now, which is a thing you do, but it's not like he's being cast in these huge big budget, like, leading role things anymore, right?
It's a lot of arty stuff. Yeah, that's true. I'm trying to think of the most mainstreamy monstrous thing he's done, and I can't think of anything since the third Batman.
It's The Big Short is what I was trying to think of. Everybody is saying he was amazing in Vice. I need to go see it.
Yeah, he's really good in it. Yeah,
but
that's fine. I'm agreeing with you. I think that name a blockbuster style movie that he's been in since Batman 3. There isn't one.
That's it. No.
Big Short is a cool movie, but it ain't a blockbuster.
Well, and
I wouldn't call that a block. I'd say that's an art fart movie that a lot less people see. And I'm fine with that. I think he's extremely talented. And every time he shows up and, you know, Amy Adams is with him or something, I'm like, okay, whatever this is going to be good. It's just, I think he may be done with the big epic, you know, Marvel style level, you know, thing. He's not going to be in a Marvel movie or something, I don't think.
I know we have more clips. Did you guys see the trailer for Ford versus Ferrari?
No.
No. I haven't heard of
this. I go out of my way to not watch trailers. I'm literally standing outside the first 10 minutes of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse because I don't want to see trailers. But somehow, I don't know how in my life, I watched the trailer for Ford versus Ferrari. And in this, you know, it's a Christian Bale, Matt Damon movie. And it's coming out in like 6 months. And I was just like, I was totally hooked. I can't wait to see this movie. You should watch
Ford versus Ferrari. Is it actually cars versus each other? Or like, what's the?
Yeah. It's a story about the Le Mans in like 1966.
Oh, I'd be into that.
Damon plays Carroll Shelby. You just watch the trailer. You'll see.
Oh my gosh, a Shelby. What were those called? Shelby, The Ford Shelby. That was a
just,
hot car.
Just watch the trailer. We got to stop. Watch the trailer.
Those cars made gulping sounds on the gas they were drinking back then. Man, they were not efficient. Yeah. Go 1 mile on a tank of gas. All right. let's a couple other quick trivia things, and then we'll get to actual clips, which we got from the movie and not from his tirade. Stan Winston died during filming. He died in June of 2008. And this makes it the last film he provided any visual effects for. They did a little tribute at the end, so that was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. But Stan Winston there for all the Terminators and many other films, obviously.
Yeah.
Old recordings of Sarah Connor are played in the film with lines nearly word for word from the Terminator from 1984 and slightly edited. Linda Hamilton voiced the lines herself, but is uncredited. And let's see. Oh, I kind of love and hate this. In the original Terminator 84, Kyle Reese asks the police, what day is it? What year? And one of the first things Marcus Wright asks or says to Kyle Reese, and this is, what day is it? What year? They did that a lot. I'll be back. There was another one. Come with me if you want to live. So there's good times. Good times.
Lots of nice references. I mean, I even think that the molten steel is intentionally there as a reference to the second movie too, you know?
Right. Okay, check this out. Michael Ironside accepted this role in this movie despite having just broken three vertebrae in his back in a roofing accident. I love the idea that he's up working on a roof. There's something about that. It's pretty great.
Hand me that bag of nails. You can just hear it.
I love
it. Okay, so then I want to know, how did he lose his money? How was he so broke that he needed to go
fix
the roof?
Maybe he just wanted to do it. Like, sometimes, this reminds me of my dad. It didn't matter how well we were doing when I was growing up or how poorly. It didn't matter. He was like, I'm going to get up there and do this with my own sweat and tears. And I'll bet Michael Ironside's one of those guys. He's just like, hey, what's wrong with the air conditioner? I'll do it. Don't call anybody. I'll do it. Like, it seems like one of those dudes. I could be wrong, but that's probably what we saw here. Anyway, he never sits down in this movie, if you notice. It's because he's in intense pain and can't sit. So there you go. Kind of like Brian in your coccyx when you're having that.
Yes, my coccyx.
Yeah, your coccyx.
I'm sitting on my coccyx right now. Yeah. I'm sitting on it, and I can feel some pain. So I should probably stand up.
Yeah, it should be. Your Fitbit will tell you to get up and move around.
Yeah, jeez.
Brian, how's your coccyx? Six.
My coccyx is just fine.
Okay,
thanks
good.
For asking, though.
No problem.
I don't get asked often enough.
Yeah. There you go. And then let's see. So back to the timeline. Assuming there is a small margin of error between the correct and alternate timelines of the previous films, this installment takes a place about 11 and a half years, which was set in 2018, before the events leading up to the first in 2029. Hmm. So I guess that means... Boy, if you
we have time.
Yeah, well, it also means that he's a lot older in the 2029 frame. That's another nine. That's another nine. 12
I decided
years.
To just my math got this age. Kyle Reese is 20, and then in the 1984 film, Kyle Reese is 28. Was how I worked out. So there's 8 years after this movie before Kyle Reese goes back in time. Mm. And again, sorry, Anton Yelchin is amazing, but he doesn't look anything like. Like Bean.
No, he's a loss, though. Having him gone sucks. You know, it's weird. Last night celebrated the 27th birthday of Dylan, who married my daughter, Taylor, who's 24. And that's the age he died. Like, that's just insane.
Oh, wow.
That seems so much younger now that I can apply it to somebody who's in the family, you know? Like, just sucks. He was so good. Yeah. And he was good in lots of stuff.
Ridiculous death too, wasn't it? Like
a vehicle accident. He parked a vehicle on a sloped driveway, and then it was in gear and slipped, and he walked around in front of it. It rolled down and crushed him against a post, and then he was there for an undetermined length of time and asphyxiated.
Yeah.
Like you imagine. A couple of hours, maybe, and didn't have the ability to make enough noise to get any help.
That's awful.
The worst.
Mm-hmm. That's really
and
bad.
I believe it was one of those, wasn't one of those dial type shifters? It wasn't like a standard shifter. It's one of those newer dial
really?
Types. If I remember the story.
Oh, right. And those are those harder to know how to where they're at or whatever? Or how do those work differently? I don't know how those work.
I'm not. Yeah, they just, I guess maybe.
It was a 2014, 2015 Grand Cherokee. Mm-hmm. And they had a design flaw. They actually, Chrysler actually settled with Yelchin's family for an undisclosed amount of money. Yeah. And you just I can't even imagine what, like, how, right. What was that?
Potential that he had for earning.
He was insane. Just taken off. Like, mm-hmm. Stuff was just about to blow up for that dude. And rightly so. He was super interesting. I think he was, he had like Oscar in his future, I felt like. He's that good. He was that good. Now, he was just, these roles we were getting were early career stuff. And, you know, he's not in the movies that would probably be his defining moments yet, but they were coming. I really felt like it. And when I got that news, I just went, really? Like, there's some of the world's biggest dicks walking around alive right now, and this is how he has to go? Erg. Anyway.
Last night in a playoff game between the Dallas Cowboys and the Seattle Seahawks, a wide receiver named Alan Hearns was crippled for life. Like, his foot was practically broken off in his football game. It was the hardest thing to watch. I like, as it happened, I was losing it. They showed one replay of it from a better angle, and I don't know why I looked. Don't look at this. It's absolutely horrible. Yep. But the thing that really struck me in that moment is this guy is young, right? Like, he's in his 20s. He's got potentially a great career ahead of him. He's a great wide receiver. Yeah. And to have your foot just destroyed in this instant, where nobody was really doing anything horribly wrong, you could call some fault, but it's just gruesome. And it's like, man, life-changing, totally life-changing.
Complete shift. There's nothing. Yeah. Nothing will be the same for him. That sucks. Yeah. This is a good depressing moment. Hey, check this out.
Yes, thank you.
Check this out. We got a little, I got a trope for you. Little kid that never says words.
The mute.
Yeah. Yes. The mute child in the future where the future's all gone to hell and back.
Is wise and will serve some purpose in the future.
Yeah, there's that. Also, I had another little problem. This is a tiny thing. Mm-hmm. Sam Worthington says that he was born in 75. At least that's what's implanted into him. And he says he heard his brother playing Alice in Chains when he was younger. And I said to myself, no, wait, you'd be the one listening to Alice in Chains if you were born in 75. Like, that's prime time for you as a teenager, not your brother necessarily. So I didn't buy that. That irritated me. And then also, how come the place where they rounded up all the people had to have big tubes that shot fire out of them like you're at a Kiss concert? What was that about?
All that lava tubes.
Because that's how you get to the from the mini boss to the big boss.
Yeah.
You have to go through the tunnel of shooting fire tubes.
Yeah. And then for me, the chick in the bucket in this movie was the machines would only come, the machines that would only come when they want to investigate a noise. They were making all kinds of craziness out there. Like when they burned the whole area trying to take out Sam Worthington before he escaped. And I thought, all right, well, that was a bigger noise, more mess, and more light at night than any of your other little trinkety noises that made the zombie made him come out.
That was Skynet paving the way.
That's right. They knew it was Sam Worthington. They knew his market. So they're like, oh, this is part of the plan. Yeah, we have to leave that noise because that's the Marcus noise.
That's terrible.
You really
don't think about it too much.
Yeah. Check your brain at the door about what machines that were self-aware would actually do. Just completely don't think about it.
All right. Well, the only other thing I would say then is Christian Bale should not be allowed to fly any more helicopters. He crashed two of them. And if you give him a third one, he'll crash that one too. So quit giving him helicopters. All right. Clips time. We have clips. Let us play them. And we will do them in the order in which they were received. Not really. I recorded them in this order. All right. Here we go. This is someone not worried about an accent. Once again, 2 weeks in a row, we have somebody who is not worried about their accent. Here it is.
I'm not worried about myself. I'm worried about the future of the human race.
She did fine except for worried. Worried both times was worried.
Yeah.
Worried.
It's a tough word.
Yeah. And I love her. Like, I'm with Ibbot. She's awesome.
Yeah,
she's kind of weird looking, but in a cool, intriguing way.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, she's Hey, she'll always be Marla in Fight Club to
me.
Oh,
my gosh. Yeah. Brad Pitt walks in a room and bumps the table because there's a wiener on it and it shakes. Remember that? So good. I'll never forget that scene. All right. Here's what? Oh, bringing out the Batman.
Olsen, objective located. There's something else you have to see.
That's so Batman.
Yeah, not the same thing.
Yeah, he did it a lot.
Gotham is my city.
Here's more of that.
Because my men died down in that hole. What did we find down there?
It's so Batman.
A lot of poop. Shoot.
I mean, you gotta
don't make me start agreeing with Randy.
Randy's
about,
right.
What? In this movie, what's wrong with agreeing with me?
In this movie, I think you're 100% right. He is just phoned in. So it almost makes his outburst worse because are you actually giving us there? If you were giving us the freaking role of a lifetime and I can't believe the acting on this guy, fine. But you're not even doing that, and then you gave that guy so much heat. Jeez.
If you're doing this, if you're having a reaction while you're doing Chaney. It's like, oh yeah, I can totally see that. I mean, he needs to be able to channel that character. He's in a popcorn Terminator flick.
Yeah. Right.
More lighting technicians. Keep on walking through. Parade of lighting technicians, please.
Sounded like Batman the whole time. All right, here's one I wrote. I wrote Little Stilted. I don't know what I meant.
This is tape number 28 of Sarah Connor to my son, John. What's most difficult for me is trying to decide what to tell you and what not to. Should I tell you about your father? Will it affect your decision to send him back in time to protect me, knowing that
too much information.
He's your father? And he'll be younger than you, only a teenager, when you meet him.
Oh, yeah, this all makes sense. Freaking...
That's right.
Should I tell you that you're going to send my father?
Time in at the gym before you send him back.
Right.
It made me think about what would I be saying to my kid right now? Like if you told me, okay, Randy, you're going to die. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just at some point in the future. Like, let's say in the next 6 months, you're going to die.
Yeah.
And your kid he's 9 right now. I'm like, hey, there's some things that I wouldn't trust him to remember me saying, right? So I'm going to record them. I'm like, all right, this is tape 15 for me to you. Let's talk about how I make coffee, because I think you're going to really appreciate some of the finer points of really good coffee later. So, I don't know. It's just weird.
I feel like I need to do that, though, because when I die, my kids are just left with thousands upon thousands of hours of podcasts about ridiculous things. Like, mm-hmm. they won't have me talking directly to them. So I feel like I need to do something like a little short MP3, put it on my desktop in case of death. Listen to this, like a little will.
All Dad ever talked about was Florida Man. We never got any sort of,
I'm sick of Warcraft, Florida Man, and movies.
But the thing is, they've had you. Like, your kids probably haven't listened to every episode of every podcast, never will.
Probably.
And that's the really shocking thing when you think about it.
Yeah, like, that's true.
I had anything of my dad, I would listen to it obsessively.
Right.
But if I had 10,000 hours of my dad, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I think for us, our kids would be like, oh my God, I can't believe, that happened to my dad. Well, at least we've got all his podcasts. I'm going to start listening to him right now.
Yeah.
Episode 6 rolls around. Eh. All right, I kind of get it.
I'm good. I get it.
Back to Minecraft.
Yeah, this will all be here later on. I don't need to listen
to it.
That's
right. Maybe I'll come back to this later on. But I'm going to listen to Serial.
That's pretty good. Pretty good. All right, here's what's this? Oh, it sounds like a robot fart. I actually really like the sound work in this movie, like, quite a bit.
Tim Burton is involved with the.
Oh, was he?
Some of it. Yeah.
No way.
Not Tim Burton. I'm sorry. I said Tim Burton. I meant Danny Elfman.
Oh.
Danny Elfman.
Oh,
yeah, okay. Because Tim Burton was, he was all, he was attached separately, but he had nothing to do with the film.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was Danny Elfman.
By the way, I noticed Reznor did the soundtrack for that Bird Box thing, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
And it's an awesome soundtrack. Highly recommend checking that out.
Whatever you do, Scott, don't go walking around the house with a blindfold on.
I'm podcasting blindfolded now. I'm doing it now.
No.
I know. Well, Netflix warned me. It's up to me now to ruin my life or not. Here's the, so this is a hey and then robot farts is what I wrote. So here you go.
Hey!
Sounds like a big old gnarly.
Wow. It did sound like leather pants and a leather couch. It sure did.
Yeah. They're so cool. I think the Terminator renditions in this thing are cool as hell.
The best.
They're the best, and they should, if they do anything future-wise, lean into that. mm-hmm. mechy and loud and weird. That's how it should be. All right, here's the line.
Come with me if you want to live.
Or one of them. That was Anton Yelchin. Oh. By the way, the Troll Hunters show on Netflix was the last thing he did. The voice work for those things, the Del Toro animated thing. That's a delightful, wonderful little show. If anyone hasn't seen it, you should watch it. It's really good. And he's the main character. And they have more coming, and I don't know who they're replacing him with, but bums me out. All right. This is why 2018 sucked.
What year?
2018.
What happened here?
Trump is Judgment Day happened.
I could have sworn he said Trump
Election
is president.
Day happened.
Yeah,
election.
All right. Such a cool sound, I wrote.
Hey! Stop! Don't look at him! Stop!
Just that.
It's just more farts. You just played more farts.
It is kind of more farts, but
just motorcycle farts.
I love it. I really like it. It reminds me of something, but I couldn't tell you what.
Oh, it reminds me of a lot of the audio work in The Day the Earth Stood Still. Wasn't that? No, War of the Worlds with Tom Cruise.
Yeah, that's a. Yep, that's it. That's what I'm thinking of, actually. Mm-hmm. Well done. I still think that movie's better than people think it is.
I like it all right.
Yeah. I'd watch it on the show again. I wrote, this stuff is bad.
Don't meet a lot of good guys these days.
Not a good guy.
Not a good guy.
Not a good guy.
And my
I killed my brother and two cops.
My accent is shitty as well. All right. Damn him, Bale.
Damn him.
All right. There you go.
Damn him.
Pretty good. He's talking about the Joker.
Damn him.
Exactly. All right. Here's a Worthington accent slip. Pretty bad one.
I didn't even know your name until 2 days ago.
Yeah, you're Australian, buddy. May as well just go in Australian. Why do you have to be? You don't have to be American.
Yeah, well.
Just who cares? Just be your natural state. You obviously can't do this very well. It's fine. This reminded me of Mr. Five is Alive or Robot Five is Alive.
Oh, right? Yeah. Anyway, I remember this.
Here you go.
Disassembled.
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 Right. Yeah.
Disassembled.
No disassemble.
Here's another one. Whoops, hold on.
We are dead. We are all dead.
That might have been right after he yelled at that guy.
I was going to say, it sounded like it just came right out of the same audio as the lighting technician yell.
Let's try it again.
We are dead. We are all dead.
Let's go again.
Okay. Jeez. here's the I'll be back line.
What should I tell your men when they find out you're gone?
I'll be back.
Even I didn't have to think about it for that long.
Yeah. Right.
Like, oh, I get to use this. I'll be back.
Yeah. I like the lead up, though. The music getting all intense.
Yeah.
And then pausing. It's pretty dumb. All right. Here's a loud sob.
You son of a bitch.
Oh, it's SOB, not sob.
Yeah. You son of a bitch.
Give you walk in my view again.
get out.
It is also a loud sob. You have it right either way.
I do have it right either way. All right, here's this. It's the film sack checklist. Christian Bale being serious, always sounding like Batman. Check. The pilot and Worthington are a little too pretty in this world. Absolutely. And finally, I want my own giant harvester mech. Check.
Sure.
Star Trek connections. There are a number of them. Michael Papajohn is in this. And by the way, a lot of those McG movies, Joseph's movies. Let's call him Joseph. anyway, in Voyager, he played security guard officers, guards, bridge officers, and more in 8 different episodes of Voyager. So there's that. And then the one that we love but are sad about, Anton Yelchin played Kyle Reese. He was Chekhov in the JJ movies, at least thus far. What are they going to do with that? Are they not going to have Chekhov in the next thing that Tarantino's working on? Or what's their deal there, I wonder?
That'd be all right.
I don't know.
The series will go on without a Chekhov character. I like the character, but without Anton.
Well, do you think they'd swap him for a different actor, or do you think they just get rid of Chekhov altogether?
No, I think that the right thing to do is to send the character off.
Right.
you know, and then
put some kind of like some kind of earwig in his ear or something. Little,
well, you know,
send him to Botany Bay.
Fine, Botany Bay. Botany Bay. So here's the thing, though. With you're actually making an interesting point. This might be the only good thing I've heard about the JJ timeline flip, because in the old timeline before Spock shot the red blood ball into the huge deal, you would need Chekhov around because it goes on forever.
Right.
But
right,
in
right,
this
right.
timeline, you could have him run off and be a teacher at Starfleet, or you could have him disappear into an anomaly, or you do whatever because you're in a new timeline. Mm. Hadn't thought of that.
True, true.
Okay, in this That's case, right. I'm all for a different timeline. Nice job, guys. All right, finally. Soundtrack great. I'd give it an R for rad. I liked it a lot. Thought it was perfect and reminiscent of the old soundtrack, and it was good. I liked it. Now what I want to know is what you guys think. Let's sum it up in 280 characters or less with our Twitter post. Let's start with Randy.
Terminator Salvation. Am I going to walk around and rip your forking lights down in the middle of a scene? Then why the fork are you walking right through? We'll do it live!
Nice job. Also, Dian Brunaway.
Dunaway. Terminator Salvation, and I quote, "We bury our dead, but no one is coming to bury you." Bail out.
Whoa. That's dark. Bail out. And then finally, Brian Ibbett.
Terminator Salvation, I'll be back to sleep before the movie's over.
Wow.
That's some
harsh.
Shade.
I think
I did like this movie. I just wanted to use the I'll be back line.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Well, look, it's a tradition to do this dumb thing at the end of the show, and you did it right.
And I did this dumb thing.
Yeah. Well done. Alternate titles just handed to me. This was almost called Maybe We Should Bail. You like that, Dunaway? Because all your bail.
I love it. Yeah. I love it.
And or The House of Common. We all forgot to mention that Common was in this.
Common, right.
Yeah, it was
wasn't in it nearly enough. The few scenes he was in, he was great, and then he was just gone.
He's always a good screen presence. Also, Terry Crews was in this, but they cut his scenes.
I was curious about that.
Oh, really?
Was that him? Because he was laying dead.
Yeah.
In like one of the opening scenes. That's exactly what I thought. I was like, is that Terry Crews? Yeah. I never looked it up.
So in the trivia, it says that there's a shot that still exists in the movie where he is laying as part of the aftermath of a battle, but that he had a bunch of other lines and other stuff in the movie. It all got cut, so... There's that. I don't know why.
Right.
I don't think Terry Crews. Terry Crews.
Christian Bale
couldn't.
Yeah, Christian Bale's like, nope.
Yeah, it's like that's it. He's out.
He's so unprofessional.
Did you say Kristen Bell, or did you say
Christian Bale?
Wow, we live in an area with a Kristen Bell and a Christian Bale.
Yeah, that's weird. Think of that.
Like what you say when you're slurring your words after a couple too many drinks and a lighting technician that walks in front of your scene.
Yeah, as always, we're also experiencing a week where Joel Cohen. Must be annoyed that Joel Cohen directed the movie Sherlock and Holmes or whatever it's called. It's got like a 1% on Rotten Tomatoes right now it's supposed to be terrible. So every time I see that happen, I just think the other Cohen, Ethan, or maybe it's the other way. Actually, it's Ethan Cohen. I think Joel's just laughing at him. He's like, meh, you're the dumb brother with a name that someone else has.
This is why people will rename themselves McG.
Yeah, see? Yeah,
the director of Holmes and Watson is Ethan Cohen.
Yeah. It just looks like as soon as you see it, you go, oh, Ethan Cohen, what? Hey, you made this piece of crap? Oh, not the one I love. Okay.
You should be Ethan Cohen.
Yeah, Ethan Cohen. Isn't that the reason? Didn't somebody say... In fact, I think this is the guy. This guy directed, or it was a different Ethan Cohen, but somebody was directing that Garfield movie. And the story is, and Bill Murray apparently confirmed this, Bill Murray was only interested in doing the voice of Garfield because he thought one of the Cohen brothers was writing and directing.
Yes. Wow.
Yeah.
That is in the trivia. And I don't know if it's true, but if it is, I mean, it's a great story if it's true.
Yeah. I don't know where you can find that confirmation, but somebody.
I don't understand how Ethan Cohen gets a movie made that's this bad, because like he wrote Tropic Thunder, he wrote Idiocracy, he knows how to write a comedy. Yeah. Why is it so bad? I want to know.
Low point, man. Bad, bad choice. This one turns out that's like the worst reviewed movie of the year. It's super, super wow. bad. Kevin sent us an email. Excuse me. The emails come to us at filmsack@gmail.com, and he says, "Hi guys, in your episode on Doom." You mentioned a swear jar. I have a reverse swear jar for my film sack funds for you. I'm waiting for you guys to be able to get through an episode without using your favorite swear words so that I don't have to turn you off when my child walks into the room.
Oh.
I'd rather she not hear or learn these words. In your sack of doom, you went almost three-fourths of the show without any bad words. I even had the lid off the jar. Alas, you guys dove back in the last 15 minutes, back on the shelf. Till next time, Kevin. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I know that my first person sounds like Shooter.
Yeah.
Kevin probably was one of those things that he complained about.
Today we did all right, I think. I think we probably did.
You know, as, I'm curious. Yeah. As a general rule of thumb, I try to stay within the language rating of the film we're reviewing.
Yeah.
So, because I figured clips could contain something that is obscene or of that rating. So that's kind of where I usually lie.
Yeah. And today any swearing in clips was bleeped. So
right.
I've been using Good Place swearing because I'm hoping to be bleeped. Yeah. So I'm hoping Scott goes back to my greeting in my Twitter post and bleeps it. And if he does, then you'll never know what I actually said.
Yeah, because you get the f and the k- t- in there, and it just, no one knows he said forked, you know? Mm-hmm. It's great. Mm-hmm. It's like the peas and succotash of news channels. That's it for your emails, and you can send yours own in. Send them
yourself.
In. Send them in to filmsack@gmail.com. We will gladly read them on the show. Next week, our movie shall be... I forgot already. What is it next week?
District 9.
Oh, we're going to watch District 9 next
week. Yes. Okay, I'm actually excited about this because I think District 9 is one of my favorite sci-fi movies. I love it. So let's see if it holds up because I haven't seen it since theatrical. I saw it twice in theaters.
It's been exactly 10 years.
Yep. Once again, a 2009 film. 09 had a lot of stuff in it, if you think about it. I guess all years do, but.
But a lot of stuff that we're going back to.
Yeah, and we start. By the way, and we started in 09. Let's point that out real quick.
Oh, no kidding! Wow.
Yeah, these were the year. These are the films of our year.
Salvation is as old as Film Sack.
Yeah, yeah. District 9, old as Film Sack. Star Trek with Chris Hemsworth as Kirk's dad, old as Film Sack. Yeah, that was before anyone knew who Chris Hemsworth was. Think about that for a minute.
Right, we didn't know any Hemsworths at that point.
That was only a year after.
Oh no! Did Hunger Games, was that before?
After, I think.
No way.
2011 or 12, I think.
Okay.
But one year. This is only a year after the first Iron Man. We were right there at the cusp of the MCU, man.
Wow!
Look at us
and
now.
Here we are, almost at the end.
Yeah. Well. Of this current run. Hopefully they figure it out.
Some. Yeah.
Hopefully they figure it out. All right. Well, that's going to do it. That'll be next week. District 9. Be here with us. We got a lot of science fiction stuff lined up, and that's just yet another one of those. Filmsack.com is our website. Filmsack@gmail.com is the email address. Please use it. We'd love to hear from you. And as always, you can find us on Twitter @Filmsack. And while you're at it, if you use Google Play, you use iTunes, you use whatever it is, Spotify, they've got a thing now for podcasts. We're on there. If you're using any of these services and they have systems to let you review us, it really helps us get discovered if you'll go out there and leave us a quick review if you like the show. So please do so wherever you find your podcast. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
You are the resistance.
Have a happy 2019, and we'll see you next week. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Let's go again!
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win. And also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.